Friends, as the first speaker pointed out, the subject of our lecture today is Traditions, Superstitions, Truth. Both tradition and superstition has some element of truth in them, but that we really need to decipher and distinguish. Superstition, if you take in vernacular language, it means Andhashraddha, blind belief. Now, this blind belief is on account of two agencies, we can say. One is religion and religious authority. You have priests, you have pandits, you have purohits and so on. In order to have hold over people, they try to make them do certain things by putting or instilling fear into them. The classic thing which we have heard many times from this platform, that there is a Satyanarayan Katha, and it is said, if you leave that Katha halfway, then something bad, Anishta, will happen. And then they will also tell you a story that a lady was listening to it, then her son was going to come by ship, and she hears that he has come. So she leaves that Katha, goes to meet him, and she finds that the ship begins to sink. And then she comes back, completes the Katha and goes, and the ship has come back to the surface. Now, as the senior student would say, the ship was really behaving like some badly managed submarine, which is not managed properly. It comes up, it goes down. What is this? Can you believe this? And yet people are made to believe it. Some fear is instilled by this superstition that you have to sit through no matter what. You have to completely hear the Katha. This is just one example. And there are many more we can add. So this is one aspect of superstition. There are religious superstitions. The other part of it is we ourselves create lots of superstitions because of what we may call as association. How many of us have not heard by now several times that if a cat crosses your path, then your work won't be done. Now, how would it have come? And especially a black cat. How did this come about? Probably somebody was going for some important work and the cat crossed the path and that thing didn't happen. It happened once, twice, thrice. Another person also experienced some time. And together, this superstition would have been put into, as it were, flowing, that if the cat crosses the path, your work won't be done. The same thing you find about this dress is lucky, or when I wear these earrings, it is lucky, or that is not lucky. How is that? Again, it is association, is it not? That when you are wearing the dress and you go for an interview, you pass the interview, you get the job, and when you are wearing some other dress, and then what happens? Now I am associating positive vibrations with this particular dress, which has brought me luck. And the other dress, whenever I wear, I remember the disaster and I say, no, this is unlucky, nothing is going to happen. So actually what is happening is that also our positive or negative state of mind and vibrations is what is really affecting the thing, and there is nothing about the dress itself. So someone who has been studying this, a psychologist, B.F. Skinner, has come up with a very good conclusion that he carried out an experiment where in a big cage all pigeons were kept. And randomly at a certain interval of time, food was put in that cage. Now the pigeons would get that food, and at that time each pigeon would be doing something, some movement. Say one pigeon might be just nodding the head back and forth, or another pigeon might be going round and round moving. So the pigeons he saw started associating the movement with the food, that when I'm doing like this, I get food, or when I'm going round, 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 then I get food. So he says this is exactly what we are doing, that when I'm wearing this dress, or when such and such a thing is there, then things work or things don't work, All of this is the way in which this blind belief has been created. And you can go on adding to it. If you break a mirror, then 7 years of bad luck will be there and what not. We know all these superstitions and we can just brush them aside. There it makes sense to say, yes, it is a blind belief. But we should not throw away baby with the bathwater. There are lots of things which go in the name of superstition and we are going to see them one by one. Why is there superstition? At the base of it, there is only one thing, lack of proper knowledge. When you don't understand how a thing works, therefore you say, oh, it is a superstition. It really doesn't exist. And many such things are there where we do not know how the thing happens, we do not know its cause, and therefore we brush it aside as a superstition, for which some higher explanation is available. Take for instance, why should one of the quotations says that why do you make a New Year's resolution? Why not at any other time in the year? Why only at the time of New Year? In fact, HPB would also insist that between Christmas and Easter, that is the time you should really make a resolve. Now, she has given the explanation. People would say, it's a superstition. You can make resolution anytime. Yes, that is true. But why is the insistence there? Is it only some kind of a blind thing which is going on? No. We are told that the early morning atmosphere is very good. Generally between 4 to 6, anyone who wants to meditate, anyone who wants to study, you see the atmosphere is pure, your mind is better concentrated, your memory is good, and that's why it's very conducive for spiritual things, for your study, for your memory. So that's the time we do and we choose, Pratah Kal as we say. The same thing applies to this period between Christmas and Easter. Between Christmas and Easter, she says, the astral life of the earth is young and strong. It's a very deep reason. And if you don't understand, you would only brush it aside. What is this? And therefore, any resolution you make it at that time, it will have added impulse and added force from nature herself. So now exactly what is happening? We know. Whatever we think, its impressions are there in the astral light. Now, astral light is what? It is a universal register. It is all around us. It's like a CCTV camera which is constantly clicking everything that happens, your thoughts, your emotions, your desires. And those impressions are retained on this register called astral light. Now, additionally, we are also told that therefore, good, bad and indifferent thoughts and emotions and desires are there. Now supposing I am making a resolve or I determine that now onwards I will remain very calm and peaceful, I will overcome my anger. Now what happens? We are being told that someone else who had similarly made a resolve and worked on it to control the anger, to become peaceful, all those efforts and energies and force is there in the impressed on the astral light. By the law of similarity, you are doing the same thing. You are going to attract towards yourself this same force and power and impressions which are there, impressed by lots of people all over the world who have been struggling like you to overcome anger. Now that power becomes available to you and you find that you are helped in your determination to overcome your anger. Now what is so special about the time between Christmas and Easter? The astral light, just like you have astral body and through which the pranic energy or life energy flows, so also there is an astral light in nature through which the life energy flows. And there is this life energy, HPB says, during the period of Christmas and Easter, this life energy is young and strong. Why? Because that period is Uttarayana. The sun is coming towards the northern hemisphere. And therefore, there is a refreshing or renewal of life energy. And because the life energy is renewed, it acts like a sieve, like a charni, as we say. And therefore, all those good impressions which are there very easily become available to you. More easily than in the normal time. This is the time when those positive impressions which you are looking for becomes available to you. So HPB says, don't think it is a fancy, don't think it is a superstition when we insist that between Christmas and Easter, what good resolves you make, you will have added power and help coming from nature herself. Another one, with most of these things we are all very aware of, but we are just reflecting about it together. What about the evil eye? Till we came to theosophy, we also used to brush it aside. What we say in vernacular language, najar lagi gai. Evil eye, najar lagi gai. What najar lagi gai? No, I don't believe. If you ask even today, most of the educated people, they would simply say, I don't believe in all that. It's a superstition. That's what they will say. And yet, it is a reality. What is this whole concept of evil eye? So there we are again told, it has to do with your power of thinking. When we think with love, have a lot of goodwill or compassion, and you have very powerful thoughts, then those good impressions or those good power which is generated by your thoughts is going to affect the other person in a positive way. But if your thoughts are of anger, violence, jealousy, envy, what happens? It can actually affect the other person in a negative way. So, theosophically speaking, thoughts are things. In fact, if we want to be very vivid about it, we can say every time there is a thought of anger, you are sending a tiny man with a tiny stick to beat another person. If that is what is true, then imagine when you are having very powerfully hostile, angry thoughts. It would really be damaging. It must. Now, for some people, this works even more powerfully. They have a very powerful negativity. And when they think negatively, it would have a very apparent effect. When it comes to evil eye, we say it is a destructive power of thought. Destructive power. And you can take the example that if you have a rod which is charged electrically, we know electrically charged rod, even by mistake, if your finger touches, you get a mighty shock. This is exactly how the functioning of the evil eye is. It is a destructive power of thought. And what exactly happens? It is not just the thought of anger. More precisely, theosophically, it is the thought of envy. Jealousy is a mild feeling, to feel jealous and then you forget. But envy is a very, very strong and a powerful emotion. You have a whole Shakespearean novel in which you have a character called Iago. He destroys everything simply because he has envy for another person. The same thing applies here. Envy. It's a thought of envy. And what is it saying? My neighbor has got a nice new car, BMW, or maybe Mercedes-Benz. Of course, I want also. Now, there is such a powerful thought of envy that if I can't have, nobody else should enjoy. If I can't have, he can't have. And therefore, knowingly sometimes and quite unknowingly, you put your glance on that car, but your heart is raging with that envy. How can he have this expensive car when I can't? Unknowingly or knowingly, these thoughts which are immediately combining themselves with what theosophy calls as points of energy, units of energy which we call elementals, it becomes an entity. Now all these entities which you are there having by way of envious thoughts, they come down, come out through your eyes. And flowing through your eyes, they actually work on the car, and the car either meets with accident or it has a big dent on it, damaged in some way. Same thing, I think, offices we used to have people envy the cotton starch sarees that you wear, and then by the end of the day the saree will tear because somebody or the other is coveting that I should have this saree, I should have this color, whatever. We can multiply examples. In fact, as one of the quotations says, this could be such a powerful negative thought that by your very glance, there have been people, HPB says, by their very glance they can kill a small bird, a toad, a frog. They just look and it is killed. This is a far more powerful power of thought. Envious, anger, violent. Simply, that thought, it is simply going out from your eyes with a kind of a current going through it. So, the evil eye is not really a superstition. And that's how we have children when they are very cute and somebody looks at them. And then it is a different kind of evil eye which is working. But they fall ill, they start crying and whatnot. All of these things are very true. This is Najar Lagwani, which is a very true thing. The third thing, and this is at a much different level. Imagine somebody who doesn't understand things which are philosophical, things which are invisible. We think man is only his physical body, there are five senses and mind, and what I can see, feel, touch, what I can rationalize logically and all that. That is what exists. But beyond that, if you tell me that man has an astral body or man has this power or that power, then I am not willing to believe. This is a position which science has always had, even today. Science doesn't believe in so many things, and that's why science is quite ignorant about many things which philosophy of theosophy is talking about. This was no different in HBB's time. There were those very enlightened people because they thought they were Westerners, they had all knowledge, and they would only laugh off certain things which are spiritual, which are psychic, and say superstition. And she has, and we are all aware of that incident where two American investigators, they come to India, and you know, in those days it was very common. Of course, now the magicians are having their shows in the theaters and all that, in the halls. But those days you used to have simple magicians or fakirs. They would be sitting at street corners and they would be doing some magical things and people would be in a crowd and they would watch. These two people see a fakir like that. He's sitting, he has a rope which he sends out in the air. He just leaves it and the rope goes up, up, up and disappears. And then a little boy is made to climb the rope. He also is climbing, climbing, climbing. He also goes up and then disappears. All the time these two investigators are taking photographs. And they don't ask anything. They go back to America. They develop the photographs. And what do they find? Only the fakir sitting there with his basket. There was neither a rope nor the boy. Sure enough, they said, this is all a big hoax. And they said, Mr. Fakir could hypnotize those silly Indians. But Mr. Fakir could not have hypnotized our camera. So our camera has properly captured that there was nothing like this trick. And of course, they go on to say, therefore, that this Fakir could fool. And the words they use is, superstitious savages, which are Indians. Superstitious savages. But we Westerners can never be fooled. Now HPB says they are very badly mistaken. First of all, it is not a hypnotism. In fact, what she calls that what he was doing was making use of instantaneous fascination. This seems to be something higher. As far as students' understanding goes, it would be one of those siddhis which falls in the category of vashitva, vashikaran as we say, but of a higher level. And she is saying that, that is how you have a magician, by a single glance thrown on the audience, the audience may have 1,000 people, by just throwing his glance, all of them are, as it were, put under some spell. It is not ordinary hypnotism. She is saying, I am challenging all Western hypnotizers to do what this fakir had done. It is far higher. And in a single glance, he is making people spellbound and they see what he wants them to see. Is this superstitious savages? Is this superstition? You don't know. And that is why it is superstition. So as we said right in the beginning, what is superstition? It's just lack of knowledge. It is just lack of understanding. It is just lack of not understanding the cause of it and what is the basis of it. You go further and you will also again have all these things about supernatural things. And always again you will find the Western people telling you that the existence of things like jinns, then what we call as fairies, in India we would call them as apsaras. These things, dwarfs, we have heard all these things. Dwarfs, fairies, apsaras, jinns, they don't exist. This is all in imagination. That means the story which is there in Arabian Nights. Right from childhood we've been hearing, and of course it's very fascinating, but we never gave a thought that such a thing can be a possibility. Aladdin and his magic lamp. Aladdin has to rub the lamp and then the genie will come. Oh, the genie and jinn we have heard many, many times. And the jinn will do whatever he asks him to do. He'll do mighty things for him and absolutely at his service. Now, how can this be? Then there are these stories about somebody, a fisherman, finding a bottle. And when he opens the bottle, there is a kind of a very airy kind of a figure comes out. And there is a conversation between them. And then finally he says, I'll eat you up because you took me out of the bottle very late. Otherwise I would have helped you. And then that person says, show me how you went inside the bottle. Then afterwards you can eat me up. Just show me once. And so that airy elemental goes inside and he puts the lid back. What is this? It's only, so Mr. Judge has to write a whole article. Are Arabian Nights all fiction? They are not. It's not a superstition. So what is it? Now, theosophy will open a door to something which is absolutely unheard of. Door to the whole idea of elementals. We've never heard about it. But HPV says that these are points of energy. Your water, air, fire, earth, we say they are made up of molecules, they are made up of atoms, and atoms are again made up of still more tiny something, and these are the points of energy which we call as elementals. And she says that the Hindus will call them as Deva Yonis. She uses the term which we have not come across, but she says the Hindus call them as Deva Yonis. Sure enough, what we see as water, ultimately if you go and ask what is it made up of, then you will say it is made up of water elementals, these points of energy. Then earth is made up of earth elementals. Fire is made up of fire elementals, and so on. What are these elementals? As we say, one name we know, air elementals. What do we call them? Apsaras. And we really feel there is a apsara as a lady who is beautiful, sometimes having wings, with very ethereal kind of a body. This is what is the counterpart of your Westerner calling fairies. They talk about fairies. So yes, there is an apsara. What is that apsara? It's only air elementals at one level if you go to see. Now, what are these elementals? They are just points of energy, centers of force. They don't have a shape of their own. And they don't have intelligence also. We give them a shape. We give them intelligence. And therefore, you find that when we are giving them shape and intelligence, they are appearing to us as having this figure or that figure. Like, for instance, you are having, say, the idea of a Satan. Everybody, if you ask them, I saw a Satan. People see devil. How will they see devil? They will see the devil as completely dark man with red eyes and with horns. Now, this is the idea we have. What they have seen is some being like the elemental and not really the devil himself. So, these beings are there. Now, these are the beings which also form our body. It's very interesting, is it not? We say our body is made up of Panchamahabhuta. Panchamahabhuta is there. But that means that if air, water, earth, fire is made up of these elementals or lives or these points of energy, ultimately our body itself is made up of these elementals. And that is how we can understand. How does this work? What they call as dowsing, for instance. They do dowsing to find out where is the source of water. We've been hearing about it, but we have never correlated how it is done. So there are people, peculiar people are there, and they will actually take the branches of a tree and make it into a Y shape. Y. And then the two ends of that Y they will hold, and that one end will be dangling. Then they will walk. There is some probability of finding water. You know, you are doing digging and then you get a well or a source of water, and there are people who help in finding out. So there is a probability, and they are supposed to walk with it. And when the certain point comes, this point which is hanging will actually begin to vibrate. Why? Because this is the person in whose body there are greater number of water elementals, and that's how there is an attraction between his body, which has more water elementals, and the water elements which is there in the earth. So he will have peculiar kind of a muscle movement, some vibratory movement, and therefore that Y which he is holding will also start moving. Then if they dig, they will find water there. Mr. Judd says that some people have more of the earth elementals. Earth would include metals. And you will find that they are very good at finding buried treasures. Gold and silver, if it is buried somewhere, this man will find. And in fact, these elementals are used also for protecting the treasures. You have many stories. So-and-so's treasure is buried, and when people try to go there, and they try to really get that treasure, there are some forces at work. Invariably, there will be rain, there will be earthquake, something or the other. What is it? These are the elemental beings which are guarding the treasure. Depending upon the wish of the person whose treasure it is, he can influence the elementals and they will obey him and guard the treasure. Are these only fiction? They are not. So there are these elementals on one side. And on the other hand, there are intelligent elementals. We see a magician performing many tricks. We have never asked how he does it. There are intelligent elementals whose help he takes. If we have ever seen, we have not, but HPB writes, that within some 45 minutes, he will plant a seed of mango, and in 45 minutes, there will be a full tree along with ripe mango fruit, where it takes 20-30 years to get you that. He'll do it like that in an hour or so. How? With the help of these elementals. We will not go on and on. There is much more about it. But if you tell anybody, will they really be able to give this explanation? Yes, they have seen this, but nobody can explain. That there are these supernatural beings which are unseen. And therefore, in one sense, HPB says that one meaning that our body is made up of 33 crores of gods and goddesses, it's precisely because of these elemental beings which are forming your body, various kinds of elementals. Now, turn to something more. You have the whole idea of shaking hands. In India especially, you will find that they do namaste when they meet. Now, a Westerner finds it very, very difficult to accept. And they will definitely say, you are superstitious people. Why do you not shake hands? Namaste. One, there is a far greater meaning and value in namaste. It says namahate. That means I am bowing down to something which is divine in you. And the other person says the same to you. But besides that, why do you not shake hands? Here again, it's a question of what we call as magnetism. Whoever has ever heard about magnetism, now these days they have started talking about it. Her vibes are bad and her vibes are good. I don't think know properly what is vibes. The vibrations. What are these vibrations? It is the magnetism we are talking about. So, here we find that, as Theosophy explains, there is a prana flowing through the astral body of man. And this prana is given out through the palms of our hands, through the top of the head, through the sole of the feet. One reason why we touch the toe of our elders is like saying, what good energy and magnetism is flowing through you, let it flow through me also. But we don't know what we are doing. But that's why you touch the feet, especially the toes of the elders. So there is this magnetism. And it goes from the palms. But it's not just the energy. It has been impressed with your thoughts, your desires, and also your emotions. Now imagine a person who is trying to walk spiritual path. And most of the time, this person is having and inculcating and entertaining only higher thoughts. Always remaining peaceful and calm. Have goodwill for everyone. Very forgiving. Very loving. Helping everyone. What happens? You find that, and he has no worldly desires. He is trying to have minimum of the worldly desires. Meditating regularly. His magnetism will be very pure. And especially this is so with the people who are saintly people. And you would have seen, they will not touch anyone. They will not allow you to touch his body. Even if they are doing katha and all that, there will be a considerable distance between the audience and that saintly man. Because of this pure magnetism and the pure aura. So if, as especially HPB says, if we are genuinely walking the path of becoming a disciple and therefore following this inner discipline of purity, of thought, desires, emotions, you should be careful. Because when you shake hands, the bad magnetism or impure magnetism of another person will vitiate your magnetism. No doubt, our magnetism is primarily made through our own thoughts and desires more than physical. And yet, when you walk the path, and that is what she says about a chela, there are some 12 rules she has given in Raja Yoga or occultism. One of the things she mentions, that a chela will have to always keep himself a little away from the crowds, from the bad magnetism. Also, he will have separate vessels, separate thali, separate vati, separate spoon. His vessels will be separate because he doesn't want that thing to be vitiated. He will not touch animals. He will not have any pets. All this is required. Now, this is not superstition. There is this whole magnetism involved over there. And this is the magnetism which is at work. And that is why you have this whole idea of not shaking hands. And she's saying, just like a good doctor will, after attending to one patient, will wash his hands so that the germs will not harm him or harm the next patient he takes. Similarly, we are supposed to be careful about what we touch and what we don't touch. It's a question of magnetism, which matters a lot when you are seriously walking the spiritual path. Now, this magnetism is supposed to be there in the shadow that we cast. You see, sun falls on your body and the body casts the shadow, but along with that shadow, your magnetism is also there. And that's how she's writing that in Russia and certain places, people do not step on the shadow of other person, because there is that good or bad magnetism. Especially she writes about people with red hair and their shadow, they will not step on it. This is in Russia she's talking about. Anyway, but there is a truth in it, that the shadow has got the magnetism. And then you have the Ramayana story. In Ramayana we have read, but not really understood, that there is supposed to be a Rakshasi, a demoness. She is called Chaya Grahini, shadow catcher. What happens? There is an ocean and she lives nearby. So in those days people used to have those powers to lift themselves in the air, also fly. What today they are, God knows how much they understand about astral travel and all that, very glibly spoken of. But here they are able to fly. What she would do is, when they fly, there'll be a shadow on the water. And she would catch their shadow, and then that person will come down. Because the magnetism is there in the shadow, and that magnetism is definitely connected with the body also. So they would come down and she would eat them up. And then we are told that Hanuman was going, searching for Sita, going across the same ocean. And his shadow is also caught. He comes down. She tries eating him. He becomes very small. She gulps him. Then he expands his body. Hanuman was Hanuman. And then, of course, her body is torn to pieces. But the idea of magnetism, we would read as a very fascinating stories, but do you know the rationale behind it? The rationale is there. If we try to understand, don't throw it away as superstition. And then what about the magnetism which is involved when we are talking about women, which in fact we would connect with tradition? It really brings us to the idea of tradition now. Tradition is what? Certain customs which are followed in the society, certain customs which are followed by a nation, by a group of people. And these customs and tradition, they become a kind of a bond for those group of people. And we are able to see that there are religious traditions, there are social traditions, there are traditions which have a lot of truth behind them, and there are traditions which are simply just like the superstition introduced by the religionists, you know, the Purohits and Pandits and priests to instill fear and make money. Similarly, you have traditions also introduced by them which may not have any logic behind that. Like for instance, you say, if you have killed a cat, now what? I have committed a sin. How do I come out of it? And he will say, you make a cat of gold and then offer it to the deity and your sin will be washed away. Is this true? Of course not. But this becomes a tradition. How do you overcome the sin? It's a tradition which is introduced by a priest or a purohit, because the cat of gold will go to him. The god is not going to take that or accept that cat of gold. Take this idea which we were talking about magnetism. The tradition, which you will find most families who do not know, some will blindly follow and be insistent upon it, and some will, especially the modern families, will throw it away. That a woman, when she is menstruating, she is made to sit separate. For 4 days when she menstruates, she will be made to sit separate. Why? Because along with that blood which comes out, there is this magnetism. And as HPB says, that magnetism actually is consisting of those which we saw, elemental beings. And there are bad elementals which she is discharging. So, whatever she touches, she imparts bad magnetism. And therefore, she is not supposed to touch anything as far as possible. And especially not food. Don't go in the kitchen. It makes a lot of sense. So, it's a tradition, and many do not like. Many articles come And of course, they will also kind of defy and say, we will enter the temple even when we are menstruating. Well, you can do so. But it doesn't mean that there is no reason behind it. The reason is your magnetism is bad. Just like when you would not think of entering a temple if you have not taken bath. Do we not purify ourselves by taking bath before we sit for puja or we enter a temple? This is some kind of vitiation of your purity. So now it is left. Now it's not as if theosophy is insisting that when you are menstruating, do this, don't do that. Theosophy only gives the basis for the tradition which has been going on for many, many years. And then there are traditions which are actually, you can say, preserving some of the good ethical and moral practice. Now, if people are asked to remember that, they will not. So, in a kind of a tradition, it is being preserved. For instance, in Light of Asia, we are being told about a person called Shingala. What is he doing every day in the morning? He would take red and white rice. And then he will scatter in the east, in the west, in the north, in the south, very, very religiously in four directions, he will throw this rice. Buddha sees him, that the time of Gautama Buddha, who sees him do that and says, why are you doing it? And he says, it's a custom. My father, my forefathers used to do it. And he adds, it is also to drive away, ward off evil which comes from the four directions. And Buddha being Buddha, he says, don't scatter rice. It makes sense. Can rice really drive away evil? What is there in rice that it can drive away evil? So say, Buddha advises that you send out good and loving thoughts to all of humanity by standing in the east, by standing in the west, north and south. You send out your positive good thoughts, which of course you can do sitting inside your room, but you can do that if you feel. Particularly you take these directions and do it. And there is reason behind that. What is the reason? In the secret doctrine, HPB has told us that these four directions have their importance. So she says that there are very high gods, which we call in the Hindu philosophy as Maharajas. And these Maharajas are supposed to be the rectors and regents which preside over the four directions. East, west, north and south. They preside over it. And one of their functions is to give to humanity punishment or reward depending upon their collective karma. Collectively, we are really vitiating nature in many ways. Through our thoughts, through our violence, through our actions, desires and whatnot. So these are the Maharajas who would make use of material agents. And she is quoting from Bible and saying that the glory of the God comes from the east. That is to say, all that influence which comes from the eastern side is supposed to be good. You have the sun rising in the east. And from the north and the west, whatever influences come, they bring epidemics. They bring wars, they would bring disaster, and therefore, it is said that these Maharajas, these beings, what will they do? They will make use of the winds. The wind coming from north and the west, they are supposed to be destructive winds. So there will be a cyclone. Whenever humanity has to have the punishment, these Maharajas who are presiding over karma of the humanity, they will make use of the winds to bring these destructive winds. And therefore, it is all the more necessary that we now set into motion good thoughts, good actions in all four directions so that the calamities like cyclones and earthquakes and volcanic eruption will not take place. This is as simple as that. So there is a science and there is a reason behind it. It's not a superstition. It is not at all a superstition that the person is scattering the rice in four directions. What about manusmriti? Time will not permit, unfortunately, to go in more depth. But manusmriti, why should have Manu given us a whole of manusmriti which tells you about how should each one conduct with the other. There are social, as it were, etiquettes which you have to maintain. How the children have to behave with the parents and parents with the children. And teacher and pupil relation. He has gone into a lot of depth about it in Manusmriti. Why? Because it has a far-reaching influence. As we saw, these traditions and customs are the bond of humanity. So, more and more people are following certain tradition. They are setting an example of a good spiritual and moral life, which will be imitated by others. That is one thing. And these are the foundation for spiritual life. For instance, it's so simple, as far as an Eastern man is concerned, that you should pay or give and show respect to your parents and elders, especially parents. Go in the West and you will not find this. Why? This is a tradition which is followed. You are giving respect to your parents. It's a second nature to anyone. If the elder is standing and you are sitting, you will immediately get up and say, please sit down. All of this kind of a respect, you will never cut him halfway. You will not back answer. You will not say any bad words to him. This respect which is maintained, it is going to go a long way. In what way? Now, Mr. Judge, at one place he is saying is that this man, when he takes to spiritual life, what will happen? He will come across a guru, and a Westerner has no idea about what is expected of him. A natural respect and a natural devotion should flow. Sometimes you have not even seen your guru, because he is writing about the masters of wisdom in theosophy. Have we seen masters? No. We only know about them. And yet, an Easterner will have a natural reverence and devotion to the master, who he knows he will never see during his life. But there is a natural risk. Why? Because, he says, this Eastern man, it is actually wound in his psychic fabric to show this reverence. He has shown it to his teacher. And according to Mr. Judge, there is a whole guru parampara chain. From the teacher who taught you your alphabet, right up to the great Dhyani Buddha, there is a whole line of gurus who are greater and greater in their spiritual development. And we are supposed to, first thing that is expected of a chela is this reverence and devotion and absolute obedience to the will of the guru. Now, why should I have this blind devotion? Is a question which a Westerner asks and Mr. Judge has to explain. So this is something which is actually giving us the advantage for the spiritual life. These values which are very much in the fabric of the Indian society in terms of tradition. But there are some false tradition. As we said, time will not permit us. We are all aware of the tradition of sati. Have we ever asked, why should sati be followed? It went on for years on end. What is a woman told by a Brahmin? You only have to die on the funeral pile of your husband. The chita, as it were. And she would actually jump in the chita, the agni of the husband's dead body. What is the fact? The fact is that by changing only one word in Rig Veda, which says Yonim Agre, Agre means in front of, it is changed into Agne. Yonim Agne means in the womb of fire. What used to happen before, that a Brahmin will recite lot of verses from Rig Veda, from Griha Sutras, and in fact persuade the woman that please you go back to the world of living. You live your life. He will not tell that you jump into the funeral pile. There were so many shlokas which were chanted. And now, she is told that it's there in the Rig Veda. If you do that, you will get moksha. Is moksha, liberation, so easy? dying on the funeral pile of your husband and you will get liberation, it would be the most easy thing. You should not live any spiritual life. Just do it. But no one questioned. No one questioned the authority of the Veda. It doesn't make sense. That is why theosophy always says, don't follow any tradition blindly. Don't follow any scripture blindly. Even the scriptures have been tempered with, unfortunately. You find that there have been additions, subtractions, knowingly, unknowingly. Some things have been just changed inadvertently. New things have been added. So, we have to use our own discrimination. And if it doesn't appeal to your heart, put it aside. There is no hurry to accept. There is no hurry to reject. Just leave it aside for a future time. Our time has almost run out. If there is a short question, we will take it up.
There is a question here. Can elementals work on their own, or human thoughts needed to act through them? When flood, etc. takes place, what force is at work? Can they be used for positive help?
Can elementals work on their own, or human force is required? There are intelligent elementals where also some kind of a command has to be given, as we gave the example of the intelligent elementals where there is a mango tree growing trick, where the magician have to actually invoke these invisible beings which we know as elementals, the points of energy, and they will then do their work. But they are far more intelligent, and therefore they can help him in growing a mango tree within an hour or so. But yes, a human being has to give a command. They will not do automatically. We are told the masters use certain elementals to find out if people are doing investigation which is going in a, you can say, occult or secret direction. Are they trying to find out the nature's secrets which they can misuse? Then the master will make use of elementals to give certain thoughts in his mind, and he will start then making investigation in a different direction. So everywhere human agency will be required. They won't act automatically. When it comes to flood, etc., we just said during the talk, how does it happen? It happens precisely because of these elementals being given certain thoughts. Many times we have said, why is there an earthquake? I think 2 or 3 Fridays back we saw that a lot of us individuals today, either we have anger, we have irritation, we have envy, we have jealousy, we have become materialistic. Everything is negative about us. Very little is positive. These are constantly going where? They are getting impinged on what we call as Mother Earth. And it is impressed on that, our Earth. And as a result, what happens? It reaches a certain point of saturation. What a book says, a point of explosion. And then we say, Dharti Mata cannot take it anymore. Which is a very wise statement which comes from simple villagers. Our sins have become too much. So actually that impact of human thoughts are there, and then there is a kind of explosion and you have earthquake. The same can be there, even about flood, volcanic eruption. It is a lot of negativity. Coronavirus pandemic, people understood we are not treating nature well, but that was gyan only for a few months. After that, we are doing the same thing again. We have again become what we were. Are we now started treating nature well? So all of that is really, the center is man himself. But secondly, as we said, it can be also done by really directing those elementals in a certain way, which some highly evolved being can do. We have heard stories, for instance, where Krishna Janma and then there is water, and Vasudev has to really cross that particular river. Krishna, his little toe touches water. Water parts, and the way is made. Read about Jesus' life. He is able to have complete control over air, that is to say, the way the wind blows. He can change its direction, he can make it stop, or he can make it become violent also. So it is both. How does flood come? As far as we are concerned, it comes because our own thoughts are not proper. They are negative, they are destructive, and we are really impinging on that. And as we said, many times, we gave the example of the Maharajas. Those beings are making use of these forces of nature, water, air, fire. Sometimes you see, these days on the television you see, every other day, fire broke out here, fire broke out there, fire broke out there. How? Why? So, the punishment which is to come to human being is coming through such calamities of fire, wind, cyclone, flood. So that is yet another explanation. So there are various ways. Yes, it is possible for the great beings who are giving us the punishment, reward or punishment, they can make use of these forces of nature, water, earth, air, fire, to give us punishment. Sorry, time will not permit, so we won't be able to take any more questions.